Jeff Fortin at UCSD. Now, Jeff is a postdoc at UCSD, and I'm sure you all know Ken. So the overview is I will talk about general gauge mediation very fast. The OPE, even faster. OPE in superspace is a way to write down many OPEs compactly using supersymmetry. That way we can construct the super multiplet, in quotes, of OPEs. And we will talk about phenomenology of GGM that you can get using the OPE. So you all know a gauge mediation of Suzy breaking. It's a way to mediate supersymmetry breaking from hidden sector to the visible sector, which is usually taken to be the minimal supersymmetric standard model. You need to break supersymmetry in a hidden sector because if you do it in the visible sector, there are certain supersymmetry sum rules that will lead to unacceptably light superpartners. For example, there's a sum rule that for the electron that decouples, which says that the two superpartners of the electron, one of them is going to be lighter than the electron itself. Since that's not observed, that cannot happen. So you put the supersymmetry breaking in the hidden sector, and then you need a way to take it from the hidden sector and put it in the messenger in the visible sector, and that way is usually messengers. You introduce messengers that are in some SU5 or some ground unification gauge group so that you avoid spoiling gauge coupling unification. And those messengers couple to the Suzy breaking sector, and they take it from there and they put it in the MSSM by means of introducing the soft terms. Okay? The good thing, there are many good characteristics of gauge mediation. One of them is, of course, that it's flavor universal. There are no flavor changing neutral currents that appear when you couple the messengers to the MSSM. And also, loop effects introduce all soft masses. And as a consequence, you have just a few parameters that describe all the different terms that appear in the MSSM Lagrangian. So originally, this happened with a weakly coupled messenger sector in both sides. Of course, you can imagine that the hidden sector is some strongly coupled superconformal theory or anything you want, and the messenger sectors, you can put those in the hidden sector too. So for the rest of the talk, when I say hidden sector, it includes both the Suzy breaking sector and the messenger sector, okay? That was the formalism chosen in GGM. So for example, when you gauge the symmetry, then you can write down Feynman diagrams like this that give mass to the gauge genus. The messengers, of course, have to have a high mass, and they do that. They acquire that mass by coupling to the hidden sector. That mass has nothing to do with electroweak symmetry breaking, of course. And after they get the mass, you can put them in a loop and write down the soft terms. The gauge genus mass, for example, is given by this Feynman diagram over here. Spermion masses are also given by two loop Feynman diagrams. And the advantage of this, of course, is that you have just a few parameters that describe all the soft terms. For example, this, the F-term VEV of the spurion that breaks supersymmetry, and the zero VEV of the spurion that breaks supersymmetry, they are both parameters that give you the different soft terms. For example, the number of messengers is also another parameter. There's a total of five parameters in a usual incarnation of gauge mediation that give you all the parameters of the MSSM Lagrangian. So a formalism that was developed fairly recently to describe gauge mediation is called general gauge mediation, in that paper by Mead, Seiberg, and Shi. So what they said was, if you try to find a definition for gauge mediation, a very natural one is to say that if I allow the gauge couplings to go to zero, then I get a Suzy breaking sector, which is totally decoupled from the MSSM. There's no Suzy breaking in the MSSM anymore. It's the MSSM without the soft terms. This looks very, you know, simple, but you can use it to get very powerful consequences. For example, you can say what is model specific and what is a universal prediction of gauge mediation. You can describe all the soft terms in terms of some current-current correlators, where those are currents in the hidden sector. You get a description of the hidden sector. Because you're using currents, you get a description of the hidden sector without even knowing what the Lagrangian of the hidden sector is. So even if the hidden sector is strongly coupled and you lose all computability in the hidden sector. As long as the coupling of the hidden sector to the MSSM is weakly coupled, you can do an expansion in that coupling and use the strongly coupled correlators of the hidden sector. And it produces some mass sum rules, which could be verified experimentally. That happens because there are three parameters that set five masses for the spermions. There are five spermions and only three parameters that set them. So in the simple case, in one of the cases, you get two mass sum rules. So the current-current correlators look something like this. This is a linear superfield. It's written in superspace here, and its components are a real scalar, the zero component. And then you have a vial spinner, and here you have a vector. And if you count degrees of freedom, you get one from the real scalar, another four from the vector, but you only have four from this vial spinner here. So you have to impose a condition somewhere, and that condition is, of course, the condition that the current is conserved, d mu j mu is zero. The correlators that contribute are given here. You have the two-point function of the zero component of the current superfield, and so on. When you gauge that symmetry, you effectively couple this hidden sector to the messenger sector, and then you can calculate this function C and B and get the soft terms that appear in the MSSM Lagrangian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, M is some typical mass scale, typically the messenger mass. If there are messengers, it's going to be the messenger mass. But this doesn't need messengers to work. It's some typical mass scale of the hidden sector. So here are some current-current correlators. Those are written down in terms of their contributions. So here is the contribution to gauge genome masses. It's given by this correlator J alpha J beta, where this is the second component of the gauge current superfield. And then for the spermion masses, you get a bunch of diagrams. The first one is usually taken to be zero by setting that VEV to zero. So usually you think about these diagrams and try to find all contributions to the soft terms coming from those diagrams. If there are messengers, you can look at the first diagram, and if there are messengers, you can go back and see that the first contribution is going to be that one. But again, these blobs represent hidden sector correlation functions. There need not be any messengers there, as long as you can calculate or somehow estimate Jx, the expectation values. You don't need to talk about the hidden sector Lagrangian at all. So clearly, this is very similar to how people probe the hadronic world using electron-positron scattering. You can, because quarks are charged, they contribute to the electromagnetic current two-point correlator. So you can write a diagram like that, scatter electrons, and cut it in the middle, and produce quark-anti-quark. So that you will be able to talk about QCD by scattering electron-positron pairs. And it's very well known how you can analyze this diagram in terms of the OPE. It helps you, the OPE helps you estimate this current-current correlator in an expansion in 1 over S, where S is the energy of the scattering, yes?
So this is the part in the knowledge that I'm not really trying to understand. I mean, this is happening because your constituents are charged on their EMM.
Yeah.
So if I go back to the current-current correlator, mm-hmm. it will tell me that your hidden sector is charged on their
yeah.
model.
Through, yeah, because you gauge the symmetry. So if you write, can I write here?
Sure.
If you write the d4 theta jv, so this is a gauge field of the, you know, the super version of it, then if you expand this out, you'll get stuff like, you know, jd, for example, where d is the auxiliary component of that. You'll get up to i's and stuff, j lambda, where lambda is the gauge genome, and so on. So these things couple because you have, you know, the
so
gauge couple.
You assume that the hidden sector has a global symmetry that makes a standard model.
Yeah, which I will, yeah.
So then you gauge it.
And identify it with a standard model gauge group through this. So this is how the OPE is used in QCD. Very briefly, the OPE basically tells you that you can have two operators at different points. And in any correlation function, you can do an expansion and substitute them with one local operator, with the difference taken care of by the Wilson coefficients. Of course, this tells you that local operators give you a complete description of all local physics. And to calculate the Wilson coefficients, there is an essential splitting that goes in the calculation. You have to split between IR and UV physics. The Wilson coefficients take care of the UV physics, and the expectation values of the operators on the right-hand side of the OPE take care of the IR physics. Here we're interested in theories that are supersymmetric, and we have a soft breaking in the SUSY breaking sector, which means that you can treat these theories as if they are superconformal in the far UV, in which the effects of the breaking are not visible at all. If you are well above the VEV of everything, everything is dynamical, so you can treat the theory as exactly superconformal. And we're going to use the OP in the usual way. We're going to calculate the Wilson coefficients. Those are one-loop Feynman diagrams, to first order. Then you calculate those diagrams, you get logs of S, where S is the momentum squared. Then you take the imaginary part of that, and you pick up that contribution. And then, of course, since we want to get the soft masses of the MSSM, you also have to get the real part, but that's very easy. You can use Cauchy's theorem on the imaginary part to get the whole thing. So you can just deform, you calculate the imaginary part around a point, you deform that contour, and then you can find the whole complex function. So that's what we're going to do. And are there any questions so far? So that's the end of the introduction.
So by this you mean that in the case of Wilson theorem, you have plus or minus S is basically the center of mass energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
This is the function that describes log in the middle.
Yeah.
This is an analytic property of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just Cauchy's theorem, optical theorem. There is no. So in the first paper we wrote, we were dealing mostly with N equals one SCFTs, and you can use the symmetry to constrain correlators, of course. You all know the familiar example of conformal symmetry, how it tells you what the two-point function of two operators is up to a constant. Kinematic constraints are good enough to fix it up to only a constant. There is no dynamics there. Also, if you have scalars, the three-point function in the CFT is also fixed up to a constant. However, for superconformal theories, Osborne wrote down a paper where he applied the symmetry to constrain the three-point correlator of two superconformal primary operators. I should say that this holds only for primary operators, of course. For three superconformal primaries, you get an equation like this. These I's here are Lorentz indices. These are some tensor structures that appear very often, so you give them a name. This is another function, and the only constraint that the symmetry imposes is that that function obeys some sort of homogeneity condition in its variables. These x's here are superconformally nice coordinates written out of two points. How z, if you know from conformal theories, is a conformally nice coordinate written out of three points. Okay, when you calculate three-point functions of operators, they usually come out naturally in terms of this z. Okay, also here they come naturally in terms of this little x's, and these big x's are superconformally nice coordinates you construct out of three points. These thetas are the same way, and because these thetas are nilpotent, turns out that the superconformal symmetry is not enough to fix all coefficients, and you get an arbitrariness here. If you write this function down, the coefficient, and you do a theta expansion, the coefficient in front of the nilpotent thetas is not necessarily known from the coefficient in front of the zero component. Okay? So this is, although that might be puzzling, but it's just because although there is more symmetry here, there is also more space, okay? Because you have the fermionic coordinates. So that's why you don't fix it. You would expect, because it's more symmetry, that you would fix it, but it's not necessarily true. So what we want to do is we want to take this O1 and O2 and put in the J, this curly J that I was using before, this linear current superfield. So you want to calculate JJO. But now we have a linear superfield. There is another differential equation you can write down for it. D squared and D bar squared on it is zero. And then you can take that equation and apply it on this correlator. And you find this T function written here, The essential thing is that the coefficient in front of the nilpotent piece is known because of this differential equation, which means that you only need this coefficient to find the three-point function of two conserved currents and an arbitrary operator. So this is here given for even spin operators, but you can also find it for odd spin operators. It's the same sort of looking formula. Okay? So of course, since you know that now, you know that the three-point function contains just as much information as the OPE. So you can try to construct a so-called supermultiplet of OPEs. For example, if you have the OPE of the zero component of the superfield, you can find the J alpha J bar alpha dot OPE, which gives rise to the function C 1/2 from before. It's given by this operators. This S is the superconformal partner of this Q. The same way that conformal symmetry, you have a conformal partner for the momentum, the generator of special conformal transformations. Here, you have K mu, of course, and you Q and Q bar also have S and S bar as partners, just to be able to close the algebra. And of course, if you write down all the constraints, you get too many equations. And so some of those equations have to annihilate the zero component OPE. So you see an example of that here. And of course, these are going to set constraints in the Wilson coefficients of the operators that appear in this OPE. So some operators that are all the operators actually that are superconformal descendants that appear in that OPE are fixed, their coefficients are fixed using the symmetry from the coefficients of the superconformal primaries. Okay? So this is the more theoretical part. And now we will apply all this to a simple example, minimal gauge mediation. That's the first model. So you have messengers, phi and phi tilde here, and there is some U1 symmetry, which I will later identify with the MSS, the standard model U1. You can extend this discussion for the SU2 and the SU3 too. There is a symmetry, this U1 symmetry that rotates phi and phi, and phi tilde with opposite phases, and X is a spurion that takes a VEV, that gets a VEV in both the zero and the F component. The F component VEV breaks supersymmetry, and you get two real scalars with these masses, so these split masses, and also two fermions with the complex mass equal to the VEV of the spurion at the zero component. Then you can take this Lagrangian and write it down, expand it out, and see what couples to D. You identify that with the current, J of X, which can be written like this. And then you can calculate a Feynman diagram. When you want to calculate the Wilson coefficient in momentum space, what you do is you bracket both sides with the required states to isolate the operator of which the Wilson coefficient you're trying to calculate. You put that operator as insertions in that Feynman diagram, and then you have to calculate that Feynman diagram with if you want to have, you know, the Wilson coefficient all the way in all powers in 1 over s, where s is p squared, then you have to put arbitrary insertions of these operators and add all possible permutations. So you have to do some combinatorics. That's the stuff you do if you're a graduate student, I guess. And then when you're done with all that, you look at this thing, you sum it all up, and oh, first of all, you get this coefficient, and then you can write, after you do this combinatorics, then you say, how can I check if the OPE is working right? Then you say, this is my OPE for the zero component in momentum space. It has contributions from operators f dagger f to the m and x dagger x to the n. It also has contributions involving the fermions, the fermion that's in the, it's the middle component of the spurion. Okay, remember now the symmetry is not broken because we're calculating Wilson coefficients. We're in the far UV where everything is dynamical. So the middle component of the spurion appears there. These are two coefficients. You can do the combinatorics for the first one. You can also do the combinatorics for the second one. So you can calculate this C0 tilde and this D0 tilde. And then you can say, I can take Q squared and apply it on this side. And I know that I get this OPE. And then from the other side, I can apply Q squared on this operator and Q squared on this operator, and they both lead to the same thing. Okay, Q squared plus other stuff, but they give you the same thing, which means that these two things add up to give you that OPE. Yeah. I'm using the, actually I'm only using the supersymmetry now. I'm only using Q.
So I wonder, can I really do this for conformal symmetry in the conformal areas? Can I still do this rule calculation?
This for the conformal symmetries, that has been done a long time ago in the 70s by Ferrara and people, where he used the conformal symmetry constraints to actually there you can resum the whole thing in terms of hypergeometric functions and find the coefficients in the OPE in a series expansion. In an exactly conformal theory. This paper is by Ferrara, Grillo, and Gatto. Okay. So then you say, so I do the combinatorics to find this thing. I also do the combinatorics to find this thing. And then I apply the OPE on the left-hand side. I expect to get something that looks like this. I only care about operators that stay after I take the VEV of both sides. So that's why I only write here this. But here I have to care about this operator too, because after I act with Q squared on this, it leads to something that has a non-zero VEV. So I have to keep it. So that's why I have to do this combinatorics too. And then I get a relation that looks like this, where this C1 half, if everything is okay, should be equal to this. So then you can say, okay, I'll do the combinatorics for this thing too, and see if they match, and they indeed match, which tells you.
You expand this correlation function of the current, and then you try to do a perturbative calculation. Because in that case, you're arguing.
It's really not like the QCD sum rules.
Here you're just using for the supersymmetry to relate with the calculated.
Yeah, I think the spirit is the same.
No.
Spirit, what you're saying is how you actually calculate JJ.
Yeah.
There'll be some rules for how to calculate JJ.
The sum
but he's saying, assuming that you calculate JJ, how I relate that to the other components.
Yes, that is. You get this parametrization of this expectation value of local.
The QCD sum rules will come in later. In QCD sum rules, what you want to do is relate, the mass of a state with its decay constant. You can do that basically using Cauchy's theorem in the OPE.
Yes.
So this is not that yet, but it will be in a little bit. When I give approximation to soft masses in the OPE, using the OPE, that's going to be more similar to sum rules. This is just OPE. There is nothing.
Yeah.
You're just calculating. You're just using supersymmetry to relate different components.
So I think here the parameter, the annual parameter is the f. It's trying to use this f to parameterize all the.
I'm calculating Wilson coefficients here. There is no f.
And
the Wilson coefficients never see the VEV of f. They're in the UV. The VEV of f will come from that operator.
No,
I'm calculating.
Here it's confusing the supersymmetry breaking. Here it's assuming that this is that deep in the UV, supersymmetry breaking effects are all negative.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no VEV for f or anything. It's just literally taking the component of the scalar and related to the component of the vector.
Okay. So, we can go on. I think
it's not, of course, if you want to go down in energy, you have to RG run these coefficients. And then the effects are going to show up. But at that high energy, these equations should all be exact, given that the superconformal symmetry from the superspace analysis has fixed all the coefficients. Couldn't be otherwise. And that's what this is basically demonstrating. Okay? Other questions? What you can take away from this is, if you know the zero component OPE of the gauge current superfield, then you can get everything else.
But is this true even if you have other operators in the format? So if I have JJO.
Yeah, I'm only keeping terms here that will, it's going to be true. But here I'm only concerned with terms that have non-zero VEVs.
Operate on all as well.
What do you mean? But if I operate from O, it's not clear that if I operate on O, up here, I'm going to find, you have to find the O's that lead to this down here, right? So Q squared.
If you have a supersymmetric version of the JJO, there will be components in that product JJO that are not another form Q squared JJ times O. There will also be components which are Q Q-square operating on the O itself in the database index.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And that basically will not find that. Right here, you're really relying on the fact that Q-square is performing both the JJ.
Yeah, but this comes from the three-point function with an arbitrary insertion of O. So, yeah. So the fact that there is an O there doesn't really matter because the differential equation that acts on this correlator will actually fix the correlator exactly. So there can only be one coefficient. Of course, depending on the O, the coefficient is going to be different. Maybe that's your question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So for every
yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The overall coefficient for every O is going to be different. But once you find the O, then the whole chain goes through with that coefficient. And so these are relations that you find between the different OPEs, and you can also find relations within the JJ OPE because I said before that there are too many constraints. So you're going to find relations between Wilson coefficients within the same OPE, and what you really find and what's dictated by the superspace analysis is that you find that all superconformal descendants have coefficients that are fixed in terms of the superconformal primary, so you don't even have to calculate much. In principle, what you have to calculate is the coefficient of x dagger x to the n, and then you can get everything else, plus other possible superconformal primaries. But in practice, this is very hard. You cannot easily classify all possible superconformal primaries with this set of fields. But so in practice, it's, you know, you have to do very hard computations to verify this, but in principle, this is how it has to work because of the superconformal symmetry. Any questions? So now we can use these results to do phenomenology. So we can find cross sections. In this simple example of minimal gauge mediation, you can calculate the functions C and B, the ones I mentioned earlier, before. And of course, the result here, there is an external momentum, and it's a function of the energy. And when you make the energy a complex variable, then you can look at the complex plane and find cross sections. From C0, for example, which is the function appearing in that two-point correlator of the zero component of the gauge current superfield, you find that the cross-section for annihilation from the visible sector to the hidden sector is given by this. So if you want to make a connection with QCD, this visible sector is Z plus E minus, and this hidden sector is the hadronic world. So this is just a typical one-loop diagram. So there's nothing hard there. This function lambda can be found in any book in field theory. It's very typical of these calculations. And then you can say, I have a calculation for the cross-section. This will have some square root of some S minus supersymmetric masses squared. And then you can say, can I use now the OPE to find that cross-section? If you read Peskin, there is a very well-known connection between terms in the OPE and terms in the expansion of the cross-section. There is a one-to-one correspondence, order by order in 1 over S. So you can calculate take the imaginary part, basically, of the OPE, and from the log pieces in these coefficients, you can get the pi, imaginary part, you put it in, and you find order by order that this result matches exactly the Taylor expansion of the cross-section that you found resummed from the one-loop calculation on the other side. And of course, you can use all the symmetries to find the rest of the cross-sections, and they all match. Cross-sections coming from C1/2 and C1 and B1/2. So these are the results on the cross-sections. These are rather easy to obtain. But the more surprising thing is that you can find actual results for the superpartner masses using the OP, using this UV calculation of Wilson coefficients that we did, and assuming that the VEV of F and X are given by the spurion in the IR, you can use the Fourier from the paper in GGM, you can use the Fourier transforms from C and B to get in an effective Lagrangian the different contributions to the mass for the Gaugino and the mass for the scalar. This linear combination is what appears in the mass for the spermions. So you have to do a lot of work here to get this, these OPEs, or you can use the symmetry, of course. In the limit, of course, where SUSY is unbroken, it turns out that this B is zero, and these C's are all the same and equal to a constant. So this combination goes away, and that B goes away too. So you recover the well-known thing that if supersymmetry is unbroken, there are no soft masses. From the OPE, you can use basically Cauchy's theorem and find that the Gay-Jinnah masses are given by this. This over here is written such that it's dimensionless. And then the mass here and this thing have the same dimension, so that dimension goes away. So Q squared is basically the mass of the Gay-Jinnah.
So why do you write this as an approximation? Because you're not taking into account the supersymmetry breaking effect?
This is an approximation for something we don't understand. I mean, we understand why it's an approximation, but we don't understand why later it works perfectly. So it's an approximation because when you want to use the optical theorem here, this B that I mentioned before has two cuts. Okay? This B up there has two cuts. So when you do the, when you use Cauchy's theorem, you have to account for the discontinuities across both cuts. But what we did is you say, okay, forget about the fact that there are two cuts. Yeah. There are two cuts on the first sheet of the log. So there's going to be a log there. There's going to be a square root times a log that has square roots. And this is a complicated cut structure. It's doubly infinite. But you can just go to the first sheet of the log and see you have square root branch points. For B, there are two of them, okay, that go the same way to infinity. And then you say, I have two branch cuts, so I should be considering discontinuities across both those. But what we did instead was we said, forget about that. Let's go to the supersymmetric threshold, which is right in the middle, and draw one cut all the way to infinity, find the discontinuity across that one, okay, and then use that to approximate the soft masses. So we say that's the first approximation. Let's do that. So then we do that, and we get this equation. It's a trivial integral. You just do it. You get this equation. For the experiment, you get this equation too. And for the experiment, the situation is more complicated because C0 has one cut, C1 half has two cuts, and C1 has three cuts. And then we said, forget about all that. Let's just put a cut at the supersymmetric threshold and draw and calculate the discontinuity across that one and see what happens. So this is...
So why is that just defined as an approximation? Do you have an intuition?
Why
is such an approximation is just
defined? It turns out that it's not just an approximation. It actually works perfectly, but and I cannot claim I understand why.
Can you understand at least why it's an approximation?
I understand because of what I said, right? Because the cuts,
because
I'm neglecting all this
the,
all this complicated cut structure.
Leading order and supersymmetric and SUSY breaking. You say that would be the right thing.
It's not leading order and SUSY breaking. I will resum all this, and I will get if you see the soft masses. You have like the g squared over 16 pi squared f over
right.
m, but then you have a function g of little x, which is f over m squared. I get that thing.
But in a sense, is it going to the supersymmetric threshold and doing a branch cut there? Kind of.
Is it like neglecting all the supersymmetric breaking?
In
yeah.
some parts of the
yeah.
calculation,
yeah.
one part of the calculation,
yeah.
you decided where to draw the cut.
That's right. That's right. We're totally neglecting the SUSY breaking.
Apparently.
It's all gonna. It's all gonna come in from here, because you just get ordered by order things here, and then you can resum the whole thing. It's like because it's like saying if I have the whole thing, I can go to the far UV, calculate there where the effect is negligible, and then as I add more and more terms from there, I basically when you do Taylor expansion, you know very close, you're okay with a few terms, and you find the asymptotes far away by adding more terms, right? That's how it works. So it's sort of the same thing here. I mean, that's just an analogy though. It's not really.
But I guess what I'm trying to understand is, if it is true that this, what you're basically doing is that you're neglecting all the supersymmetry breaking effects,
mm-hmm.
because that branch cut that you're converging on is the supersymmetric branch cut,
yeah.
And you're finding that that result matches the other calculation. Why is that too surprising, given that your entire discussion started by saying that you're going to ignore all the supersymmetry breaking effects?
It's not clear that it should work, I don't think. It's not clear that it should go through. Using the, I mean, here it works, of course. It's not clear because When you do an expansion in, you know, you have that function g of x in the mass for the gauge Gino, or f of x denoted usually in the mass of this fermion, you do the expansion, this is going to work. You can just do it, and you will find the different terms in the expansion. But it's not clear that it should work. You don't have to include the whole thing. You know, you can just stop and say, okay, do I get these coefficients now from that expansion? And you do. And it's not really clear why, to me at least. But we can talk about that more. Because it also works for the spermion masses, which is even more complicated, because there you have 6 branch points that you throw away and you just put a supersymmetric one in. Okay. So you get the superpartner masses from the OP, these approximations. And of course, this is a very easy way to get soft masses, because of course you don't need to calculate the whole OP. You can calculate the first operator, which after acted upon by q squared or q squared q bar squared has a non-zero VEV, because these are the operators that appear in the soft masses. And even in strongly coupled theories in the hidden sector, you can still use the OPE, of course, to calculate these first approximations to the superpartner masses. Another way to get them involves the subtlety of the OPE. When you calculate the OPE, it's very essential that you split momenta at some normalization point mu. This is described in a paper from 1982 by NSVZ. So you split at some mu, that's not a normalization scale, it's just a normalization scale, and you say everything below mu is captured by the VEVs, everything above mu is captured by the Wilson coefficients, so that mu sort of acts as an IR regulator for your calculation. So then if you look at this, you say on the left-hand side I have something that has no mu, on the right-hand side I have something that has mu all over the place. So how is that possible when I take the VEV? So it's possible because there's operator mixing on the right-hand side of the OP. You write down operators, and this K, for example, is called usually the Konishi current. And that K has a classical classical Wilson coefficient. There is a three-level diagram that you can write that contributes to that Wilson coefficient. And it has a one-loop VEV that is both UV and IR divergent, has both lambda and mu. So when you put it in and you write the right-hand side of the OP in terms of your normalized operators, the mu, order by order, is going to cancel at every point from the X tiger X contributions, okay? And it's going to be replaced by lambda. It's actually pretty amazing that it works, but it does. So in the end, you can use that to calculate approximations to soft masses, because you know the operator mixing has to take away the mu. You can relate the coefficient of this to the coefficient of the operators X tiger X to the N we were calculating. And knowing the coefficient only of that, which is a three-level thing, you can actually use it. And of course, then you need to know the anomalous dimension entry in the operator mixing matrix that mixes this operator with x dagger x. K squared is going to mix with x dagger x squared, and so on. And you can get approximations for the gauge Gino masses and the spermion mass squareds without even calculating the Wilson coefficient of the operator that gives you that. All you really need is the Wilson coefficient of K, which is three level, and the mixing matrix between K and the operator. It's really no less work, but. Okay, so in summary, it's very important to realize that the OPE respects the superconformal symmetry, and that statement says that the Wilson coefficients do not know if the symmetry is broken or not. Okay, they're calculating the far UV, and as far as they're concerned, everything is symmetric. Only one constant, when you have the three-point function JJO for O of arbitrary spin, only one constant is enough to fix the OPE, given that that O, if there are different O's, there's going to be different constant. That's like in conformal symmetries, conformal theories, when you have a three-point function for operators with spin, there are more structures you can write down, and those are independent coefficients, but there's one coefficient for all different structures, right? So this is similar to that. So you can find relations between the OPEs, and of course relations within the same OPE that relate coefficients of superconformal descendants to those of the corresponding primaries. And you can use, of course, the OPE to find cross sections and approximations to soft masses that work actually very well. Thank you.
QCD summaries.
Yes.
Basically, if you try to calculate something, you calculate the correlation of the current, and then you do the OP, and then you know something because of the strong interaction, you know something you don't know. So you parameterize
these are
those things.
The quark bilinear and the gauge inner condensate. The gauge.
The condensate of these local operators. You use some you parameterize that with the condensate of the local operators. Then you can measure something and then determine those condensates.
Determine the condensates.
No, you can measure so basically you measure those condensates. Like you can measure the mass of raw metal or the mass of the something like the decay constant of some metals. And then you can give some predictions on that. So what is the
I don't know what sum rules. You're talking about NSBZ sum rules?
Yes.
Because there you're getting all you're getting from NSBZ sum rules are relations between decay constants and masses of higher resonances.
But the input to get those ones are the condensates.
That's experimentally known.
Yeah,
you don't evaluate.
So the experimentally known is something basic. And then when you do expansion, it's actually you have infinite number of terms.
Yeah.
But from some physics argument, you know that only a few of them are important. So you try to measure, you try to determine them using your experimental measurement, and then you try to use them to predict other parameters like for higher resonances for other things. So I don't know what's this.
When it's used in QCD, QQ bar and GG, they are input parameters. They're not. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but.
So the input parameters can be the pi.
If you want to calculate
what is your concern directly about what he said?
So this one sounds to me just like the SVD.
The calculation of the soft mass is.
How can that possibly be true? This is supersymmetry.
Yeah, this is a supersymmetry.
I mean,
the largest part of the
issue was the debate.
But it's the correlation of the current. He just trying to parameterize something we don't know.
It's not just that, right? Like it shows that because of supersymmetry, there are all those relations between the different operators.
But
in experiments and not from experiments, it shows that there's one thing that you only need. That's not true for QCD.
QCD sum rules, QQ bar and GG, they are experimentally measured things in the lab. You put those in. The same way I will have to put in what this F and what this X is. I don't calculate that. This is the VEV. When I take the VEV of this, this F, for example, is the VEV of the operator F.
Yes.
So that has to go in. I cannot calculate that.
So
then you can tell me what is it. Is it an Orafarty or something in the hidden sector? And then I can tell you what F is and so on. I mean.
So in the hidden sector, every condensate is like everything is, you don't know related to this F and X because of the conformal symmetry.
So
you said you do need to measure something. You measure the spermial masses,
right?
So you can get F.
Yeah.
And then when you try to calculate other correlation functions,
you can try to do NSBZ sum rules for the hidden sector and find possible, resonances in the hidden sector, but who really cares about phenomenology of the hidden sector right now?
No, what is your predicting power?
What is my predicting power in what sense? This is like a formalism that uses the OPE to give you, it's another way to look at gauge inner masses and low energy observables using the OPE. I'm not claiming that I have made a new contribution to gauge mediation.
I mean, is that saying that he found a new relation between the soft mass? That is just the general gauge mediation. I already told you what is the most general relation there.
I reproduced them using the OPE.
When you said you obtain the exact masses, soft masses with gauge mediation,
yeah.
So these functions F and G,
yeah.
I thought they were not exact, but they were just the
one.
RG resummation, the leading log RG resummation.
At one loop, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
those ones. I'm doing a one loop computation too.
Yeah.
For the Wilson coefficients. Presumably, if I do the two loop contribution to the Wilson coefficient and I do the thing again,
Maybe
at two loops it doesn't hold anymore.
Okay.
But we haven't checked that. That's a valid concern.
It's just something that introduces higher loop.
This is all one loop.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the error you're making in your approximation is higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I can reproduce.
It's not surprising, it's better than a 2-1. But you just say the fact that it includes the whole re-summation isn't obvious.
It is. It isn't obvious. And also, if you do it technically, what happens is you want to sum over M and N, this M and N over here. And when you calculate G of X, for example, sorry, that's not there. So there's this M and N sum that you have to do. Well, you calculate G, when you try to calculate the function G that appears in the masses, these two sums, one of them is divergent. So there's a problem, but then you can use, you know, you can read this book by Hardy. He has methods to resum divergent series. You basically regularize it with some generalized formula, like the generalized Dixon's theorem for hypergeometric functions. And then you regularize it that way, and then it gives you the right thing. I mean, it clearly has no reason to work, and it does work. So it's, and you do the same thing for F. You get divergent series, and then you regularize them, and they work. They sum up to the right thing. Pretty, you know, I don't understand why it works, but I would be happy to talk about it.
Is something like a theta function kind of regularization?
It's similar to that, but it's for hypergeometric functions. It's called Dixon's theorem.
Another question?